Hi, I'm Aeneas Williams. Welcome to the NFL Players Podcast. I'm excited because I'm going back in history, but not too far, to one of my proteges who is doing extremely well now and doing great things. None other than Corey Shavers. We're talking about Dallas Cowboys playoff game. That's right. How about them Cowboys? We had a great run together, playoff experiences. And just talking about HBCUs and what Corey is doing now. Let's listen in. Corey Shavers, 1998. And guess what, Corey? You being on this podcast is probably long overdue. We're talking about legends, talking about life, talking about things that people may not know about the Corey Shavers coming out of Vanderbilt, second round draft pick. Here's the first thing I'm going to open it up with. How many people you think know it was Corey Shavers' Vanderbilt team that probably kept my homeboy, Peyton Manning, from winning the Heisman Trophy? Can you speak about that, please?
You know, it's funny, Aeneas. I was talking to David Cutcliffe, who coached Peyton in school. He's at Duke now. So we were talking about it earlier this year. And he was saying, like, hey, you guys gave us some tough games. And I thought about you. I was like, because my response was, yeah, but y'all won. So, you know, all those tough game talks and stuff, I used to mess with you about thinking that we had done some. We never could come out on top, and that's the thing that I guess that's the only thing I remember today is, like, I'm still kind of ticked off about that.
Well, you say you're not coming out on top. You guys, no matter what happened, you seem to always be able to beat the Tennessee Volunteers. It kind of reminds me of Orlando Pace when he was with Coach Cooper at Ohio State. I always mess with him because they could beat everybody except Michigan. And that probably kept him from a national championship. But as we move forward, Corey, I'll never forget, man. You get drafted in the second round. You come, you have all this hair on your head, man. But one of the things I remember when I first saw you was the confidence that you had. And that confidence came not just from your ability to play football, but the amount of intelligence that you possess that, to me, stood out. Because so many people don't realize that football started in Ivy League schools. And football was always a thinking man sport. And a lot of the guys in the Hall of Fame are intellectuals as well. It's not just talent. So that's one of the things that stood out. So when you were drafted, what were you thinking when you were drafted in the second round to my beloved Arizona Cardinals?
Well, you know what, man? It was kind of funny because I felt like I should have gone higher, right? You always feel like that. I know you probably felt like that when you were drafted. But I was happy. I was elated to be able to come somewhere where you know, I knew football. So I'm like, man, I'm going to get to play with Aeneas Williams, you know? So it's kind of cool. And I knew a lot of the other players on the team, like Eric Swan and, you know, Simeon Rice, who they had drafted. Eric Hill was a top 10 pick. So I felt like if I could come in and just find my way early on, they were drafting me to come in and kind of play with you guys like we were going to have three corners on the field at the time. Because right. You remember back in those days, Nikki, the NFC East had three. Everybody had three corners.
Correct.
You had Philadelphia with Troy, Bobby, and Al Harris, and you can go on and on, Felipe Sparks and C. Horn and all those guys in New York, and then Daryl and Dion and Champ and all those guys in Washington. So it was a three-corner division. I mean, I was just trying to make sure I could come in and make some plays, or I felt like I'd be able to, but things got off to a slow start.
One of the things I want to make sure anybody that's listening, Corey, you said something. When you came in, you pretty much knew the roster. And not only did you know the roster, you knew the roster of other teams. Share with everybody that's listening, number one, where your passion for the history of the game and the understanding of the game, why was that so important to you at a young age?
Well, for me, I mean, it was because of my uncle. My uncle was everything to me in terms of, you know, back in 1992, I was a ball boy in the Broncos training camp. So the same trivia me and you used to do, I used to quiz a lot of the Broncos, and I was just in high school, but I would quiz the Broncos players about stats from other players on the team. And that was like my uncle played obviously a long time. He's from an HBCU at South Carolina State, but he played 13 years and had a much better career than me. But that's how I got into it. And he's a big trivia buff. So when me and him talk, he's always giving me some trivia from 19, whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, that's really why I got into knowing it, because I just kind of followed how he had been as a professional.
And that would be Barney Chavis. Did I pronounce that correctly?
Yes, Barney Chavis. He actually went on to coach after he retired in 1985. But he was actually, when he got drafted, when he was in high school, he couldn't, at the time, he couldn't go play at anything but at HBCU.
Right.
And so, and that's the reason why he ended up being the highest draft pick in 1973 in the state of South Carolina. He went second round, 36th overall. So I did beat him on that part, but he had a much better career.
Now, your uncle having had that history, historical Black college university, HBCU, you went to Vanderbilt. Were you tempted or did you consider prior to going to Vanderbilt, we know how prestigious of a school it is, that you initially think about going to HBCU? And now that you've attended Vanderbilt, would you do the same thing, make the same decision again to go to Vanderbilt?
I got to admit, man, I'm kind of feeling you. I need to get you on CNN. I like your question. No, but the one thing I would say, man, is that if I had to do it all over again, South Carolina State was interested. And so much in my mind was creating this pathway for myself that I sent my videos, as you know,
right,
out to. I was trying to be a broadcast journalism major, so I sent them to the top 10 broadcast journalism schools or communication schools. And actually Vanderbilt wasn't one of those, but I felt like I could create my own major there and get a lot more internship opportunities in Nashville. Mm-hmm. So that was the reason why I kind of veered away in terms of where I was sending my videos. South Carolina State did actually offer me a scholarship, but if I had to do it all over again, I just say, look around, you know, whether it's Sean P. Diddy Combs from Howard, whether it's Oprah Winfrey from Tennessee State, you know, you can go around. I mean, there's a lot of examples where the historically Black colleges have still yielded some of the best people in our country. And that's gone all the way up through 2021, Kamala Harris obviously being the vice president. So I think we have to kind of keep those things in perspective in terms of what we're expecting to get out of school. And sometimes you can, you know, maybe stray too far away unnecessarily.
Now, when you say stray too far away, when you're talking to the day, one of the things I always enjoyed about you, even right now, if we talked about what you're currently doing with your investments, I love to hear when people make good decisions. So you're leaving high school, you're sending out videos, you're doing this stuff yourself. You have the understanding of particularly the type of career path you're actually in right now. It was all intentional. Was that organic, or did you have mentors that helped you learn to think intentionally?
I was very serious about not having my parents pay for school. And then to along those lines, you know, I worked hard, you know, in terms of just like, you know, whether it's chopping wood, you know, in the backyard up to 11 o'clock at night and having to get that fire ready, you know, just little stuff like that gave me a purpose to the other things in my life, you know what I'm saying? Particularly when it came to being organized academically. Academics were very important to me. And that was really my goal, was to get into school, a good academic institution. And the only thing I was referencing earlier, because of the rankings in this, when I talk about HBCUs,
yes,
a lot of times those schools may not get ranked as high because of the amount of research and funding that actually pushes up the school's rankings. Gotcha. For a lot of these schools around the country, as you know, being a finance genius yourself. But the reason I mention that is that sometimes you look at those rankings and that can kind of deter you a little bit, right?
Right.
In terms of like where you're going because of the U.S. News and World Report ranking. But when you look at the end results, a lot of our leaders now, you know, around the country still went to, including yourself, as a Hall of Famer, another example, still went to the historically Black colleges. So that's more of what I'm saying, like in the comparison ring or vein.
So now let's transition to football, man. You come 1998, I would just lavish all of this praise on you, man. I had already been with the Cardinals for a number of years. We had never even got even close to the playoffs. We draft this guy in the second round out of Vanderbilt. Next thing you know, we end up in the playoffs. Would you accept my praise and my adoration for you that you played?
Oh man, opponent? No, I appreciate you messing with me. You know that's not really how the story went, but you know the thing I remember about that season was a couple different things and a couple guys that me and you, you know, had a nice run with, and that would be Kwame Lassiter, right, and the four interceptions he had. The late Kwame Lassiter, God rest his soul, the four interceptions in the final game of the season. A couple of those plays I got beat on too, and he had to pick it up against the Chargers. And then the other thing I remember from that season was the two interceptions you had against Michael Irvin in the playoff game. And my goal that year was, if I could get you to get action, because a lot of times you wouldn't get action. So when I got into the lineup, my only goal was just play well enough where Neas can get him to throw at him. Because, you know, I watched how you worked, and I remember just the sprints you would do during practice, sometimes 10, 1500 and 10 meter sprints during the practices. And that's all in preparation for the game, right? So on the game, if I was ever get out there with you, and I told you this, I said, believe me, I'm gonna make sure they throw it at you, because the only way you can do that is just hold up your end of the bargain and at least compete. And that way you could have a chance to go out there. And your playoff run that year, to me, was among the best by a corner in NFL history. Because not only did you pick off against Michael Irvin twice, you came out the next week and picked off the slant against Randy Moss in the end zone, and you took that back 45 yards. So, again, even in that game, hey, they're not going to just keep throwing at me. I got to make sure. I just wanted you to be able to get some action, because I knew if you did, you was, you know, continue to cement your place in NFL history, and our defense would be better.
You know, one of the things I never thought about, Corey, and I was thinking about it prior to our podcast, was just what you talked about. What is it like? Yeah, as you said, in Vanderbilt, you were that number one corner. But and you explain what you wanted to accomplish to get people to throw it my way. But what is it like being on the other side of a number one corner and getting the heat? What is that like mentally?
I think it's good. I think it's one of those things, it's easier to stay engaged. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Because a lot of times that corner, it's normally the technique lapses, right? And this is the technique lapses of you out there and all of a sudden your footwork is off for a play because, you know, you got a little sloppy with maybe, you know, not recognizing the split of the receiver or the formation that they came out in. So you got to make, and what I mean by, I want to make sure our listeners know, mm-hmm. when I say get them to throw at Aeneas, I'm talking about one or two times in the game. I'm not talking about, you know what I'm saying? Like, he might go a game. And remember, I'm over there the first 10 games. I didn't start that year. I was the nickel, coming in on nickel and playing special teams. So I'm seeing this every week at the other court. And I would see, and I could understand the frustration that you were going through, because there'd be some games where you wouldn't even get a ball.
Right.
So I think from on the other side of it, I think everybody should relish being in that person, because that means you got a chance to make plays and show that you can play. You know, and so for me, I thought that being in that position, I loved it. You know, and one thing about me that I did not have a problem with was getting beaten. And I think because if you understand that you have some weaknesses, you're going to get beaten. And so for me, I was always able to respond competitively, which I think is important after you've gotten beaten. Because everybody says have a short memory. Well, you're not going to just forget about what happened. You just got to keep competing. You know what I'm saying? Like, you're still going to be mad about it and try to correct it in the film room.
And Corey, as a legend, having that experience as a cornerback of being able to still be competitive after being beaten, how have you used that principle in your everyday life?
Man, it's been huge, because there's been so many times where I might have had something happen bad in business, or it might be something that happened bad in terms of, you know, just any type of anything that you're doing where you fail. And that could be just something as simple as, you know, something you're trying to accomplish maybe.
Right.
And I think that's the thing that, you know, football and life have so many different parallels. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the big reasons I tell a lot of kids, you know, make sure that you go out and if you play sports, the goal shouldn't always be just to play sports because you're trying to get somewhere in sports. Sports kind of, to me, provides a little bit of a balance in terms of, you know, what life is going to bring at you in everything that you do.
Hey, Corey, we talked about the second game. We know about the Cowboys. We upset them in the playoffs in 98, but we got to the second game, and I was matched up against Randy Moss. You were matched up against Chris Carter, a good friend of mine. Chris was mic'd up, man. What was going on? Because Chris is a talker, man. I would see him times over there talking to you. It didn't matter whether he was mic'd up. He just so happened to be mic'd up. He's a talker. What was Chris talking to you about, Corey?
Man, he was talking about, man, you sorry. it was fun, man. Chris, I think, was really kind of more or less, you know, I felt like it was kind of pretty genuine. I mean, I was talking some noise or whatever, but he wasn't paying much attention to what I was saying. Like, man, look at the scoreboard. But, you know, the thing I think he was trying to kind of get across was like really just the amount of respect you and him had. He noticed that, you know, okay, you're a pretty competitive kid. You want to learn how to be a pro. Hey, man, watch what that guy over there is doing. Follow him. You know what I'm saying? Kind of like look at, you know, those are some of the different little tidbits he was giving me during the game. And he always would say, it was funny, we were talking earlier about, you know, football is not who you are. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, we're talking about like you're more than just football. He was saying stuff like that. You know, so I think he just was kind of trying to, they were in a comfortable position. They had a little bit of game control on us. I mean, I think he was just kind of giving up some tidbits just for a young player. But I mean, I tell you what, man, I enjoy playing against him because for me, you know, I again, being a historian, I love this game at Ohio State. Yeah, right. And I felt like he was one of the most acrobatic receivers that I had seen play, particularly just being able to contort his body along the sidelines and stuff like that. So it was an exciting matchup for me.
And Corey, a couple of guys I think about that we played with. Number one, we already talked about the late Kwame Lassiter, but also we would be remiss without bringing up Pat Tillman's name.
Yeah.
One of the reasons is because when you came in, I saw humility, I saw work ethic, and I saw intelligence. But the physical attributes, you have to have to get in the league. So that's a given. But you're also your connection with your teammates. You having that unique relationship with Pat Tillman, that unique relationship with the late Kwame Lassiter. Give me one or two things that you learned from each of those guys.
Well, from Kwame, one of the things that I learned from, I guess you could really include both, and it was something I always, I took a lot of pride in too, which is how good they were in terms of every down. These guys were dominant players on defense that were relied on unbelievably, enormously from our football team. And one year, Pat had 30 special teams tackles. Another year, Kwame had 29 special teams tackles. We're talking about numbers that would rival. I mean, they should have been in the Pro Bowl just on those numbers alone.
Right.
So I think that is one part. And then the other thing is Pat would read a book every day. And the passion that he lived with was 27 years, I think it was, that he lived times three or four. That's how he lived his life. Whatever you think you might get accomplished in 50 or 60 years, Pat got it done in his 27 years. I mean, like, we could be – just some of the experiences we had, because we were neighbors, right? And you wouldn't believe it. You know, just – he would, I mean, he'll climb up anything. I mean, he was just – he was just, I mean, I got a lot of stories I could tell about that. We don't have enough time. And then just Kwame just had an infectious smile and an infectious energy. He had a swag, you know, his confidence. He really believed nobody was better than him. And that's something I take from them.
Yeah, one of the things you do look like annually on Father's Day, I typically will get a call from you. And when I talk about transition, you've transitioned out of the league. I've transitioned out of the league. Guys like you are part of what I would call the connection that helps facilitate transition, because transition coming, and sometimes it comes when we're not expecting it. You and I both had good long careers, but it's still when you transition at such a young age. I was, I think, 38. What has transition been like for you, Corey, real quick?
Yeah, just quickly. I mean, I think it's been great. I mean, I don't like to use too often, because great can assume that everything goes great, but I'm talking about great in terms of the things that you consider are ups and downs, and what we just kind of talked about, right? So that's what's been great, is it not necessarily being smooth and embracing that part of it. But I think overall, in terms of focus, I had a very, very, fine-tuned focus on what I wanted to do and how I wanted to get it accomplished. And I began it before, when I first started my business, was my rookie year in the NFL. I started my business, and I've run that business to this day. You know what I mean? And so that was one of the things that sometimes I think the transition has to be a part of who you are, and it's not, doesn't have to be something you create. Right. So, like, if you have a passion, I would encourage some of the players that are currently playing. So many times people want to just say, you're a football player, or you're an NFL football player, and that defines you. You know, like I tell people all the time, with Aeneas Williams, a Hall of Famer, and I can't even believe I was his teammate, but that's not what I think about first. What I think about Aeneas, I think about you and some of the messages you gave me and teammates, and you did it in a way where you were never condescending. You always found a way, which I thought was a challenge, to be able to talk through and to people and not talk down to them. That's a gift that you have. And that's something that you kind of carried over in your transition. And for me, it was all about, I was always about, you know, being able to do multiple things. I've always been a multitasker, whether it was when I was playing in the NFL. And if that's what you do, whatever, whoever you are, buy into that just as much as you buying into being a professional football player. And never let the NFL be the only thing that people think about when they say your name. That's the big thing that I would say for all the kids that are playing now, or young men. You know, that's what they're going to make. Most people are going to make that be what you are signified by the rest of your life. But you've got to make it be about more some kind of way.
Right. In other words, that's not who you are.
Exactly. Exactly. Corey,
as we close out, here's a statement. When you hear Corey Chavis, the Black Mel Kiper, and let me just give a little backdrop to those that are listening. You do the Draft Nasty magazine. You've been doing this when you got in our locker room. This was your passion.
Right.
Evaluating high school, college athletes, guys that are in the pros. You've been on the draft. You do broadcasting now. When somebody refers to you as the Black Mel Kiper, Corey Chavis thinks what?
I look at that as a compliment. You know, I feel like Mel Kiper has been tremendous. You know, what he's done for the NFL has been tremendous. He's increased the visibility of the NFL draft. So, I mean, I don't necessarily think that. I think everybody has their own identity to a degree. Right. You know, it's not like I'm going to, you know, what would be a good way to put it? I'm not gonna call Nia's the Black Moses, you know. but you know, to me, you're pretty close. But I mean, I guess I'm not just gonna go
over. I haven't pointed any red seas yet, man. Hold on for
right, me. Right. Well, you know what I'm saying, but so I think Mel Kiper's kind of done some things. I guess my point is he's kind of established his own lane there. And I think, you know, you get compared to somebody like him. I think it's just cool because that's, you know, he's a legend in his own right. And it's all been because of his own perseverance and work ethic and the things that he's done from just a stick-to-itiveness point of view.
Final question, and this is for anybody that's listening. Corey, Mel Kiper does his homework. You do your homework. Teams do their homework. Millions of dollars scouting. Why are there so many misses when it comes down to drafting player?
You know, I feel like this is what happens. What we consider a miss now, Aeneas, is the undrafted free agent, right? If a guy is undrafted or Tom Brady goes in the sixth round, it's considered a miss. Mm-hmm. And me and you've talked about this extensively, but back in 1993, the draft was, we had the collective bargaining agreement, the CBA comes into play, and now the draft gets cut down. And then the next year, I think it was 8 rounds that year, the next year is 7 rounds. Right. So the pool of what you're choosing from now, and there's going to be more you're going to be more apt to make mistakes if you don't have that 12-round draft. Right. So I think that's something that people oftentimes forget about, is that, you know, there was a lot more rounds back in the day. When my uncle came out in 73, it was a 12-round draft.
Right.
So, you know, there was nothing wrong with Johnny Unitas, I believe, was an 18th round or whatever draft pick. I know he was a pretty late draft pick. And we can go on and on, you know, with names of guys. Deacon Jones, you know what I'm saying? Like, go check out where he was drafted. So those guys would have been considered misses because they made it and they didn't get drafted as high as their resume speaks for. In fact, you could say a number of teams missed on you, right? You were in the third round, but you're a Hall of Famer. All those teams wish they could have a do-over on you. But you can't have do-overs. So I think that draft being condensed has opened up room for more misses.
Gotcha. Final question, HBCU reference. You see Eddie George, Tennessee State head coach. You see Dion Prime coaching at Jackson State. What happens in Corey's mind or heart when he sees guys going back to these HBCUs as head coaches?
It's unbelievable. And I think they've done a fabulous job. I like the way that they've constructed their staffs. I think they've taken a very systemic approach in terms of how they want to create the systems around them with offense and defense. They understood what they were trying to do, and they both had success pretty relatively early. It just makes you feel good because there's other coaches around who've been around that are going to get spotlight now because of them. You know, other coaches, I was just watching the SIAC championship game last night between Albany State and Miles. And this is going to open up more attention for a guy like Miles as head coach,
right,
who's made it to that championship game 3 years in a row, discounting the 2020 pandemic shortened season. So I think that what they're going to do is bring more attention to the HBCUs. And I think it's well-deserved because there's a lot of good coaches and players in HBCU football. And, man, there's a lot of good players that people have overlooked.
And, Corey, this has been an amazing podcast. I am so glad that other people get a chance to meet that rookie, 1998, in the locker room. That literally, the things that you're doing now, your accomplishments, man. Kudos to you. Thank you so much for joining our podcast, and the best is yet to come.
No, thank you. I appreciate you so much for having me. I just really just want everybody to know just everything you've done for me, you know, just well beyond football, the football field. I remember one time you had me go to see somebody. I forgot the guy's name, and I came back. I wrote down all the verses when we went to one of the that was way back in the late 90s, man. So you've been doing a lot for me for a long time, well beyond the football field. And, you know, my appreciation is probably understated on this podcast.
Thank you, my brother, for being on with me. I appreciate it.
No, thank you for having me.
Thanks for joining us on the NFL Players Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and follow at NFL Players Podcast on Instagram for the latest player stories and to connect with the NFL Players community.